environmental impact statement and locally preferred alternative. We have Eric Engstrom from BPS here. I'm going to have to recuse myself because AECOM is, I think, currently involved in the engineering and design of the facility. We're not involved in the permitting. I have no personal involvement in the project, but I thought it just best for me to recuse myself. But I'll sit in the crowd just to kind of hear what's going on. I won't be reporting this to anybody, though, so other than for my own interest.
And we're just going to take a couple of minutes to set up. Is everyone ready?
We are. Thank you for your patience with us.
Excellent.
Hi, everyone. I'm Teresa Boyle with PBOT, and I am the City of Portland's project manager on the Southwest Corridor Light Rail project. And I'm here today with my teammates from Metro and TriMet, and we're going to talk with you a little bit about the project. So I'm sure you've been playing along at home. It's a 12-mile-long corridor. About 7 miles is in the Portland segment itself. There are two park and rides in Portland, multiple park and rides along the alignment. In general, we're trying to connect the three very important places, Tualatin, Tigard, and Portland together. And we are just, the project is being led by Metro and TriMet at this point, and multiple other agency partners, as you can see. There. Within the city, PBOT is the lead for the project in partnership with BPS, and then there are many other bureaus involved in the development of the environmental documentation, the review, and coordination efforts. I'm really the preamble, so I'm just like going to move it along. We are in the environmental impact phase, and for Portland specifically, we have a couple of alignment choices. Just south of I-405, we could be on Barber or we could be on NATO Boulevard. And then from there to the approximately Capitol Highway, the portion of it near Barber Transit Center, we could be on Barber Boulevard itself or adjacent to I-5, between I-5 and Barber. And then similarly, west of Barber Transit Center, we could either be on Barber or on a structure and going adjacent to I-5. So we are just about to enter the public review phase for the environmental impact statement, and that will wrap up at the end of July, we believe. Our steering committee will select the preferred alternative, what we've historically called the locally preferred alternative, in mid-August, and then the city council, our city council, would adopt that locally preferred alternative probably in late September, maybe early October. All of the jurisdictional partners do something to either adopt or endorse the alternative, and then Metro Council takes the final action adopting the project. All right, here we are today, just to kick off. One of the things you'll see when you look at the EIS is something called an initial route proposal. This is new for all of us, including the FTA, and it was their thought that if we can compile a number of the alignment choices and put them in the DEIS, it gives people something to reflect on and comment on. It's not intended to be the locally preferred alternative, but it's a way to help people understand how impacts could come together. The city has a number of things it's doing in parallel with the light rail project. We are in the process. We've developed an equitable housing strategy that could accompany the light rail project. We're doing some work around the Ross Island Bridgehead area. There's a jurisdictional transfer of road authority that needs to occur, and ultimately we will need our own funding strategy to bring the city's share of local match. So for the longer term, after we've adopted the locally preferred alternative, this is the schedule we're looking at. We're headed toward financial commitments in 2020, both from agencies, but also hopefully from the voters. And if all stays on track, we start construction in 2022 and open in 2027. And those are my slides.
All right. Hi, I'm Christopher from Metro. I'm Metro's project manager working in partnership with TriMet and PBOT on this project. So go through a couple of project overviews, and then Dave will talk in more detail about the proposed project and the benefits. And then we'll get into what the draft environmental impact statement has found as potential effects to historic resources. So regional high capacity transit system, all these are light rail lines with as well as WES. I think you know the bus rapid or an enhanced transit. Enhanced bus system is also being planned for East Portland and Southeast Portland right now. Dotted line shows the approximate location of this project. And this really goes back to Metro's 2040 growth concept. Many people, the equivalent of six Hillsboroughs, over 600,000 people moving to the Portland region up into the year 2040. And I think we can feel those effects now. And so how do you get people to school, to jobs, to home without just providing tons of freeway capacity? And so particularly in the Southwest Corridor, which is roughly the I-5 and 99W corridors, 70,000 more people we expect to live in that area in the future. And this area is growing about twice the rate as the rest of the region. And that's about how many people, quarter of a million people will be working in that area by the year 2035. And so we think that there needs to be additional people movement capacity in order to at least maintain quality of life while this growth occurs. And this is how much hours of congestion a day we anticipate on I-5 by the year 2035. The project is not going to fix that. What the project will do is offer an alternative to those options. So how did we plan this? Something that was different about past MAX lines in the region is it started with the Barber concept plan, work that Tiger did on vision for downtown Tiger, as well as the Tiger Triangle, and is all the way down to Tualatin, and trying to link essential places. It's a best fit line. You can't connect everything, but TriMet does have a very good integrated bus and light rail system. How do you serve these places and connect schools, jobs, and homes?
Hi.
I had a question. Can you go back to that slide just for 1 second and describe
the places?
Place types. Yeah, I guess I'm just, so you've got them sort of in a, you know, in a hierarchy from essential down to neighborhood. Does that mean those are the land use sort of, I mean, I understand sort of neighborhood if that's sort of a, you know, land use, mm-hmm. right? What does essential mean?
So I have to be honest, Dave maybe has a better answer. This happened before my time in the project, but back in, the planning started in 2011, and there was a lot of public engagement at that point, simply trying to figure out what the project should be, where should it go. A lot of things were looked at, like a streetcar system in Tigard. Mm-hmm. And so one of the effort was with all the project partners is to identify, not with land uses, as well as what are the current and future uses somewhere, what are these sort of hierarchy of places, and what are the sorts of projects that could put these together best. Mm-hmm. So I don't know the official designation of those. Okay. This is part of an overall shared investment strategy. And there's a bigger plan where we identified a lot of other transportation efforts as well. And in fact, TriMet started actually a new bus service between Sherwood and Tualatin as part of the overall project to try to connect some of those places.
Meant to be a heat map of where most ridership would be expected to desired places for ridership.
Ah, okay. So it's partially density.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Dave Unsworth. I'm the director of project development and permitting with TriMet. And this team here has been working together for a number of years trying to produce this thing right here, an environmental impact statement. It's required by our federal partner if we want to move forward. So we took the land use plans and we came up with a number of different alignments. This is what the project is today. Is it connects a bunch of dots. It connects the green line that starts in Clackamas that goes down the Banfield, goes down 5th and 6th. We'll continue south from here, hitting Portland State, OHSU at the Gibbs Street Station, Hillsdale Burlingame at our Bertha stop or Custer stop, a number of stops on the main part of Barber Boulevard, Barber Transit Center, also known as the West End Town Center, PCC Sylvania and the school trips that are there. Tiger Triangle, which you don't always hear about, but we hear a lot about it. It's a triangle that's denoted by 99W, I-5, and 217, where the city of Tigard sees a ton of growth going there. They're downtown, and finally at Bridgeport Village. That's the alignment. How come it doesn't?
I'll just move it on down.
So what's included in the project as we see it today? Currently, we see an important connection up to Markham Hill. There's about 19,000 people want to go up there every day, and making a connection up there simpler, better, is very important to our decision makers. A shared transit way. So if you look at the orange line from near OMSI all the way to 4th and Lincoln, thank you. There's a place where we share our buses, share with light rail tracks. We see that same thing happening here and getting buses through that come from Hillsdale fast and quickly through some core congestion places. We see shuttles up to PCC Sylvania, and we see a significant amount of new sidewalks and bike lanes along Barber Boulevard itself. We rebuild the whole street from curb to curb and actually add more to it. So in doing that, though, there are some impacts to properties that occur, and I'll just denote that now. What do you get for the project? Well, what you get is significantly new mobility. So 43,000 average weekday riders in 2035, that's a lot. One in five commuters heading southbound in the PM peak will be on MAX. That's pretty impressive. And there's a real imbalance. What we're seeing is Tigard is becoming its own commercial and employment centers, much like the city of Portland is, but there's a lot of transfer between those two. So access to those jobs in Tigard are just as important as the access to jobs in downtown Portland and to the east. It also, I think, addresses climate smart growth, both here in the city and in the region. And I think in the end, it really will end up with station communities and transit-oriented development in these regional and town centers. So that's what we see, what we get from it. And again, some infill of a bike and ped network. Keep going. So lots of different choices here. We've started, the CIV has been a large CIV. We started with bus rapid transit. We've started with 60 different alignments, focusing on key trade-offs. And you see the three or four dots there that we've really been struggling over, trying to get it right. And keep going there. So what we decided to do was we had a choice of a branch versus a through route. Conclusion was that we had better connectivity to Tigard and Tualatin with a through route. We had better transit service, more frequent service to downtown Tigard with a through route. It was $8 million less in operating costs per year. That's significant. And in the end, it was more cost effective. In the north end, we had two different choices. Should we be on Barber? Or should we be on NATO, essentially from a little bit shy of Hamilton Inn? Staff worked hard, and this is just a straw dog, if you will, straw man. We believe that the Barber alignment is a little bit more promising because it provides a better connection or shorter connection up to Markham Hill. It has faster travel time, and there are fewer property impacts. And because we're going through a historic district there, that means there are fewer historic impacts as well. But the Ross Island Bridgehead improvements are very important to our partners at the City of Portland, and we get it as well. We need to figure out a way for our pedestrians, our transit riders, to get across NATO Parkway in a meaningful way and to undo some of the spaghetti and damage that's been to that community for many, many years as a result of the transportation infrastructure. So heading further south, here's a choice that we're struggling with. The viaducts at Newberry and Vermont, should we avoid those historic structures altogether by going to the side of that? That would reduce cost. It would make our construction easier. But it wouldn't do things like fixing the bike and ped connection that goes through those. And those are getting to the point where they're engineeringly obsolete, structurally obsolete. So maybe there's a need to be doing that. So we're kind of having our cake and eat it here. We're trying to avoid them, but yet ODOT's coming back in and saying, hey, we may find money in order to replace those given the age of those and the slide issues that they have in that area. Next. Then the next one is kind of outer Barber. Should we be adjacent to I-5 or should we be in the middle of Barber? And the conclusion that staff came up with, the stations are much more accessible and visible if you're on Barber. It's a safer place to be. That also allows us to really fix what's on Barber. It means that we'll fix the network of sidewalks that's missing through there. We'll put bike lanes on there. And there's actually fewer residential displacement. One of the things that we're looking at doing is that avoids a whole bunch of reconstruction of some I-5 off-ramps and ramps that go towards Multnomah and not Crystal Springs, but I can't remember the name of the road.
Capital,
thank you. two places that we're looking at modifying the alignment. As we've studied the alternatives for like 2 years now, we've come up with some late ideas of avoiding some impacts that reduce cost and allow for a station near 68th on 99W, and also, but avoids rebuilding the Crossroads Bridge across where Crossroads, where I-5 and Barber and Crossroads come together. We would look to avoid that given the amazing cost of rebuilding that whole intersection. Next.
All right, so I'm going to focus on some of the slides that are about the process, and then I'm going to move quickly through some images about impacts, given the time we have left, and we can come back to those during the discussion, and I can also provide this this slideshow. So NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act, it's intended to help disclose the possible impacts, and that's why we're here in front of you today. And the draft EIS, for anyone who hasn't dealt with one of these before, it's draft environmental impact statement. It's intended to be user-friendly. It's sometimes hard to find the answers to questions, and that's part of why we're here. It's intended to be neutral. It's supposed to compare the project to a 2035 no project alternative. And the analysis is at a segment level, which means segment A is basically from PSU all the way out to basically Terwilliger. Segment B is from Terwilliger out to the city limits. And so if you're trying to say, well, how many impacts are there to the house to the South Portland Historic District, it's a little hard to sift that out. So I'll go through those. So an important thing is we have appendices and we have unprinted attachments. You have in front of you some of the unprinted attachments. As you can see, they're large, and this is, they're available electronically, and it's a cultural resource survey that has a lot of information about historic resources. There are also attachments to that attachment as well. We printed one of those for everyone, Appendix A, and one copy of B, which you can see is very large. Some information has been redacted, which is about specific locations of potential archaeological resources. It's not the sort of information that we want people to go find on their own. So here to run through some of that information. And of course, NEPA will compel the project to avoid, minimize, or otherwise mitigate significant impacts, particularly to things such as historic resources. Historic resources are also protected under Section 106. And if we end up having to do a full acquisition, then there's yet another section of a different law that gets triggered. I think you're probably familiar with that. We did consult with the State Historic Preservation Office on the methods. The area of potential effect, or APE, is within 50 feet of the anticipated construction footprint. So it's a little further from simply where the train would be. There was an estimate of a TCE, or temporary construction easement, on things. There was look at almost 600 structures that were potentially eligible, and that's what that very thick Appendix B runs through. It's all 584 of those. That includes ones in Tigard as well. And after a preferred alternative is selected, then we'll start working on the public engagement that's required under Section 106, which includes engagement with property owners and more involvement with SHPO. What SHPO did say to us is, no, please do not prepare DOEs for hundreds and hundreds of documents. We're busy. And so please select a preferred alternative first, and then let's work and see if anything here is actually eligible. So we've treated everything as potentially eligible as an impact. So there are some things which we flagged as impacts, which upon further review about the actual condition of a structure may not actually be a historic structure. So we've taken a broader, more conservative approach at this point. So there's a map. This cuts off Tigard on here. There's only one acquisition in there. And so the red dots are full acquisitions of the project as designed. So keep in mind that this is initial. We froze designs at about 5%. It was really TriMet. And so there may be things simply as, oh, let's just nudge the train that way, and then we avoid the acquisition. So this is not a statement of this is the way things shall be. This is a snapshot, a moment in time, and what would happen with the designs at a certain point. Segment A, there are three options, and all of them would have certain acquisitions, and then there would be differences between them. And this is information that's available in the draft ES. Segment B actually has fewer, and there's the fewest you could get is two full acquisitions with the designs as drawn originally. And so in Segment A, all three of the options would affect three historic resources, and that's the two viaducts plus Getting kind of close to Fulton Park, a house at 5910 Southwest Ralston. The way you find out this information, as I put this together for the presentation, is in the Cultural Resources Survey, which has got the nice cover of those. There's a table called Table 8. What it does is it goes through and it lists all of the kind of evaluated structures, as well as whether it would be a easement, which is a T, temporary construction permit, P, partial, or F, full. And so in here, these images are just of the full. The South Portland Historic District has 75 contributing properties within the area potential effect. Option A, one to acquire two of those. The A2 properties would impact a listed National Register of Historic Places property, plus also affect some contributing properties. These are the A1, these are the two properties, both contributing resources. This option on Barber would impact. A2 Bridgehead would also impact these resources. Those are all contributing, and this is the listed item. It's also known as the Jewish Shelter House. There's a different A2 on NATO option, and in addition to the Bridgehead impacts, it would also affect these contributing resources. And these are just the full acquisitions. I'm not listing the partials here. And so you can see some that are not contributing resources, plus all the same ones as the B2 option. And then in segment B, in Outer Barber, the Capitol Hill Motel is, if you're, it's not a great picture. It's got little red buildings. There's another kind of series of three motels would be affected by some of the options. All the options would affect those two buildings that you see, and that's at Southwest 53rd Station, and there is a historic freeway bridge over Multnomah Boulevard, and that would be affected by all but one option. And that's one of those places where where there's a little bit of a sidewalk and all the bike lanes go away. So there's a little bit of a tension there. It's a historic, potentially eligible historic structure. It's also a safety hazard if you are not in a car.
Could we ask for 5 more minutes of your time to get through this presentation?
Yeah, that's fine.
It's a 12-mile section. There's a lot going on here. Yeah. The next is we feel like it's, our decision makers have told us that we need to make a connection up to Markham Hill. Those jobs, that access up there is very important. In fact, TriMet just has gone through and procured the synagogue in that area and looking to protect that right at Gibbs Street. So our first acquisition, after asking FTA permission, we're able to acquire that because we see that's the footprint of where we want to connect up to there, avoiding that. Albeit. And the next one shows there are really a couple of different choices, elevators and bridges, elevators or tunnel. This shows basically on the bottom, you can see one elevator. You're going either at or underneath Twilliger Boulevard. So Twilliger Boulevard being a certain status here, how do you get across that? And then you're having another elevator to get to either the third or the seventh floor. Next one.
I didn't do all of the option ones.
So, and then the other, there are lots of mix and matches. Here's a tunnel that goes all the way through, bored tunnel or dug tunnel that goes up with an elevator shaft that would go up to the seventh floor. We think, although we're signaling that the project will be responsible for that, we have a lot more work to do in that. And so we see a similar but separate process that happens this fall, winter, where we go in and really get engaged with the neighborhoods, park resources, OHSU, and really try and work through that to understand the differences between the two different options there.
And just one note, and so the EIS, if you look through it, it lists for the Markham Hill connection options that they all have two historic property effects. Those two effects are the synagogue that Dave just mentioned, and it's Terwilliger Parkway.
Yep. This is kind of, we went through this a little bit before, but the purpose of having a document like this is to disclose and ask people for comment. What do you think about the different options being laid out? What do you think about the draft IRP, the initial route proposal that people have come up with? We're looking for people to tell us what they like about it, what they don't like about it, what we ought to change. And that public comment period essentially is about open. That'll close at the end of July. There'll be a public hearing on July 19th with elected officials. And then August 13th, the steering committee will make a recommendation after it weighs the public comment, the environmental impact statement, and a recommendation from our citizen advisory committee. Then we move on from there.
Yeah, and this is where a lot of the work to avoid impacts.
So we have a final environmental impact statement that has to address the chosen alignment. It commits to mitigation, and it finalizes itself with a record of decision. That's the formal NEPA document being done. And then we go out to voters in November 2020 to see if they are willing to put money towards transportation. And if that all goes well, then there's the federal funding agreement and the construction that occurs after that. Got a long way to go, but this is an important step where we're said, we've done all this work, we've narrowed the sieve down to a handful of very promising alignments. Public, we want your input on that. That's our presentation, and we're here for questions.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Well, it's an exciting project for all of us, honestly. You know, this is, it's about time that, you know, that this route happened. This is really a critical piece. I guess the first thing I'd like to hear a little bit about is just kind of mitigation ideas. It looks like all of your alternatives are going to involve some adverse effects. Mm-hmm. So you've probably been considering mitigation. I mean, I'm sure some of that is at the very local level, you know, to the individual structures that are somewhat impacted. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
I think I can. So we've been through, for each of our light rail lines, we've done this, and we've worked with the city, and we've worked with SHPO in order to define the appropriate mitigation for it. Obviously, the first starts with the avoidance. Can we avoid it altogether? If we've got to take some portion of the property, what does that say to it? And then it basically, if we are acquiring the whole property and it has to go because the right-of-way is getting wider, we'll look at appropriate mitigation in consultation with SHPO and FTA. What we've done in the past, so we've done photo documentation. We've done on the transit mall, we've actually created things that talk about the history of downtown. At Bybee Structure, there's a display there that provides input and information. We've done websites, so it could be it will in part depend on why the site was important. Was it due to architecture? Was it due to the history of who was there before or the activities that happened through there? That helps to inform our mitigation strategy for each one. We've got a long way to go, so we haven't done determinative eligibility forms for all of these, and we haven't done a determination of effect forms on it. And those all feed into what would be appropriate mitigation. It'd be fine to come back here and talk with the Landmarks Commission as we get back down to that point, and I expect that we'll be visiting you for the South Portland Historic District at different times too. So we would engage with what you see as the appropriate mitigation, but we'd have to do that in consultation with the SHPO and the Federal Transit Administration.
Yeah, I think we would really appreciate that, especially as you come to your preferred alternative. The Appendix B, was it, that is floating around here, did that have all of the potentially affected projects? So for each alternative, so you've got everything in there?
Everything, but so what the project includes, so there's one exception to that, are a set of sidewalk and bike projects that would help get people to stations. And everyone, including FTA, felt comfortable with the statement that those would be designed to avoid impacts to historic structures. And so that you wouldn't put in a sidewalk and impact a historic structure. That's just not a choice you would make in design. So everything else in terms of connections to PCC Sylvania, Markham Hill, all the different rail alignments are covered in there, and it's 584. And so it's kind of a high level review, and there's information about each, kind of brief information about each structure in terms of what its history is, if known, and whether it may be a contributing resource or potentially eligible, and the reasons why or why not.
Okay. So as for each segment of your route, as you choose the alternative, I mean, for instance, you know, sort of Barber versus NATO in that first section, many of those are going to be dropping out, or maybe not many, but some will be dropping out of that booklet.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what we heard from the State Historic Preservation Office. Don't give us everything in the world because we don't have time. As you narrow down and do that narrow down in a way that's informed by the impacts you're doing, and we'll expect you to avoid those wherever you can. But that subset, once you pick that, then let's focus on the work on that's necessary for determinative eligibility and determination of effect forms. And once with the effect forms allows us to get to the point where what are appropriate mitigations for those impacts.
I don't want to call it a fail-safe system, but the sub-consultant who worked on that is AINW. You may be familiar with them.
Yeah. Very
and
good.
Then however, we also contracted with Bob Hadlow from ODOT. And
oh, yeah, I know Bob.
So he did a double check on everything. And so he added some things back in where AINW is like, well, we don't think it's contributing. And Bob had a different opinion. And so we jointly presented this to SHPO. We had them in town and gave them a tour.
Okay.
So, and also just to let you know, a number of tribes as well as agencies were invited to be consulting parties on Section 106, mm-hmm. and so did not hear back from any of the tribes. But interestingly, Restore Oregon, the organization, was requested to be a consulting party, and they accepted, and that was at the direction of SHPO to ask them. So otherwise, it's Portland and Tigard, really.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone else accepted ODOT.
Okay. And where did you say you are on your 106 documentation? Is that?
Early in. So we've consulted, we've done windshield surveys, we've created that information, but the formal determination effect forms have not been submitted yet. And once you're determined if you're eligible, then you go through the effect forms. So they were clear. We got enough stuff to do. And we're like, great, because that is 800 or so different.
Yeah.
I think it's a good call. And frankly, our relationship with the SHPO in comparison to where FTA deals with Seattle, they were surprised. So both through archaeological and above ground resources, our work, recent work on the Orange Line with SHPO have got them to the point that they're pretty comfortable in the way that we work together as agencies along with FTA.
And then in terms of, it's not on the timeline there, by the time the federal FTA and then actually Federal Highways for the point of it is a cooperating agency on the environmental process, by the time they issue the record decision that we need to be through all the federal environmental processes, including 106 and if necessary, Section 4F, if something ends up being a full acquisition. So we're anticipating the final EIS to be complete by the end of 2019. Mm-hmm. With a record of decision at that point. We could have more time on record of decision, and so that's moving pretty quickly. We have 2 years when we enter what's called FTA project development. We haven't even started yet. So at the moment, we're hoping to get through the entire 106 and 4F process by the end of 2019. If need be, we could have more time.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, these are all big, lengthy processes.
Yep. And we'll be back. So, you know, the bar of 50 years or more brings in a whole mid-century kind of buildings that we've got to go through and assess.
Yeah.
And I think there's just so many different things being asked of, if you're putting light rail in the middle of the road, you're rebuilding the road, you're rebuilding. If you're going to rebuild it, you're going to rebuild it with ample sidewalks and bike lanes. And at some point, you're going to be impacting some properties. And that's what gets us where we are with with some of these. It's not that TriMet hates old buildings. It doesn't.
I have a quick question, maybe more for staff and how this interfaces with our standard kind of procedural land use review. If a property is going to be demolished as part of this proposal, would it have to go through a standard demolition sort of review? Or
potentially,
or does this get wrapped up into one big land use review, or how does that all?
I think that is yet to be determined. But if there were going to be demolitions of contributing resources, Type 4 would be required. Whether or not we package that, I don't even know if it's possible, but maybe. So you would advise on that, just like you would any other Type 4. And then if there were significant changes, but it wasn't a demo, you would...
Type 3.
Yeah, you would review Type 3. And there are probably going to be some staff-level reviews, too, of changes to properties.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Earlier in your presentation, I don't know if you can go back a few slides. but you had the individually listed.
These?
Yes. Thank you. So these, you know, are contributing resources that you would have full acquisition. Full acquisition meaning you'd have to demolish them to put the...
Probably.
Yeah.
Sometimes full acquisition is when there would be an access problem, though, sometimes.
Okay.
Like maybe the structure would remain, but for all intents and purposes. And so I leave it to TriMet designers to figure that out. But that's also the alignments as designed, which is not final design. It's 5% design. Mm-hmm. So the hope with many things. We also have some park impacts mm-hmm. that are listed, for instance, but where it's like, well, if you were able to narrow a sidewalk as an example, if that's an option in a place, then maybe you can avoid that impact.
I see. And in terms of the Jewish shelter house, this listed, is this the only one that you run across that's in
I don't believe it's active as a Jewish shelter house. I don't believe. It's got two fronts on it. The front on Barbara.
Yeah, but listed.
Listed.
I mean, the actual South Portland Historic District is of a... itself listed.
Yeah.
So to the degree that it's impacted, that would also be a listed, but I believe sure. those are the only two.
And FTA doesn't make a difference between eligible or potentially eligible or listed. So we've mm-hmm. got to treat them the same way from a federal standpoint. I recognize that a city standpoint, it's got a different level. Mm-hmm. But our hurdle, our hurdle for us is to get them through State Historic mm-hmm. Preservation Office and FTA, and their bar is if it's potentially eligible.
Thank you.
Got to treat it the same.
Well, I've got just one more kind of process question, I guess, as you move into the Section 106 and, you know, you're doing survey work. The assessing the relative importance of some of these resources, I think, is going to be a really, you know, the kind of key for developing your decision making. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I hope you are not just, you know, relying in great part on the HRI work, because obviously that was done in the early 80s and quite a bit has happened. So, yeah. So as you, you know, move into the survey work and you're kind of looking, you know, citywide and statewide at sort of relative rarity and things like that. I guess, you know, we would definitely like to hear how your decision making is going in terms of which resources are going to be impacted. I'm glad to hear that you'll be letting us know also about mitigation, just because I think that's also
part of it. The 106, as Chris mentions, takes you into a Section 4F, which is actually a higher bar.
Right.
And you have to go through and rationalize why. You got to show why this, why you couldn't avoid it, all the different steps that you took to avoid it.
Alternates, yeah.
So alternatives. So there's significant protection in the federal process mm-hmm. already ingrained in that you... That doesn't mean you should trust us. We'll do that work, and I'm sure we'll come back to this body at a later day and explain how and where we are with some of those decisions.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Any more comments? No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah.
Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.